Bustin' Loose. Chuck Brown, born on this day, the man who gave us Go-Go and More, one of the great performers. No mistakes, interesting bridge. John Lee Hooker born on this day, Chuck Brown born on this day. This is the day that we saw the beginning of the Nat Turner Rebellion and the death of Huey P. Newton. A lot of kind of synergies on this day. We are talking now about the national news, international news surrounding us. We're going to focus on the Islamic State, on the Ebola outbreak, and on Governor Rick Perry and why so many of the nation's politicians, conservative and liberal, are saying, why don't you leave him alone? And we'll talk about what that means. We are joined here once again by Dr. Cassonia Whitehead. Kay Whitehead is assistant professor of communication and affiliate assistant professor of African and African-American studies at Loyola University, author of Notes from a Colored Girl, The Civil War Pocket Diaries of Emily Frances Davis. Read the book before she comes on the show to talk about it. Glenn Ford, who is executive editor of the Black Agenda Report, was a founding member of the Washington chapter of the National Association of Black Journalists. Lenny McAllister, Republican strategist, former congressional candidate, current host of Night Talk, gets the point out of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and on KDKA in Pittsburgh. And you can see his work at LennyMcAllister.com. And Jenna McLaughlin, who is editorial fellow at Mother Jones Washington Bureau. Good to have you all with us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And the number here is 410-319-8888. You can write to us here at talk@steinershow.org. You can log on to our Facebook pages. You can tweet me at Mark Steiner, 410-319-8888. And let's begin with the complexities of the Islamic State that confront us. And, you know, when we look at the news and, of course, America kind of jumping back and horrified at the beheading of James Foley, and then America saying they're going to jump in because of the threats against the Yazidis in Iraq and the growth of this Islamic State. But then I was reading this morning about 700 people from one tribe in Syria of Sunnis who opposed the Islamic State were killed in the streets when they came in to take back the town that the tribe was defending themselves in. And people are not even sure what to even call them anymore. There's all these different names you want to call them. But the question is, how do you respond? How do we respond as a nation? How does the world respond to this Islamic State? And we can argue about its roots, which we might do too. But Glenn Ford, let me start with you.
Well, I don't know about we, but the American state is quite responsible.
Go ahead, Glenn Ford.
The United States is quite responsible for the existence of the Islamic State, of ISIS. It and its allies in the region, Saudi Arabia especially, and Qatar, and Turkey, which is a member of NATO, have nurtured the Islamic State, which has rapidly devoured most of the opposition, the armed opposition, to the regime in Syria. It is because of the United States and its allies' support for many people would say invention of the armed opposition to the Syrian regime, that we have this caliphate on both sides of the now non-existent border between Syria and Iraq. So the U.S. is caught in a bind. How is it going to keep on pursuing its policy of regime change in Syria and keep its hand in Iraq? It wants to do both, but that's a juggling act that even a superpower will find it very difficult to handle.
But Lenny McAllister, I'm curious as to your thoughts in here as well. I mean, I think that one of the difficulties here is that I think that what's come out of this is that the American government was never very serious about getting rid of the Syrian government and regime change because they didn't want the jihadists to take over. I think that was part of why there was reluctance to get involved. But now the situation's out there. In some ways, I think what Glenn Ford's saying, America, the American government, our policies did help create the situation we're in. So what should our response be?
Well, number one, I want to make sure I congratulate you on the great appearance that you had on MSNBC over the weekend. I got a chance to see you, and I was very, very proud to see you, Mark, so good job there.
Thank you, Lenny. Thank you so much. I'm sorry I can't join you Saturday night, but we have engagements already scheduled, and I need to keep my marriage happy. And it's already happy, but I'm going to make it happier.
No, like you said, keep it happy.
It's a happy marriage. I'm going to keep it happy.
I know what you mean. I know what you mean. I just want to congratulate you on that. But to the question of ISIS, I think that, unfortunately, one of the things we have to once again ask ourselves is, do we want to be the geopolitical leader of the world, or do we just want to react to world events? And I think the world is generally safer when the United States of America has a driving hand in what goes on. And with that being in mind, we're going to have to invest once again, unfortunately, going back to the region. This is why it was very disappointing for us to pull out of Iraq the way we did. This is why it was very disappointing for us to focus a little bit more on Libya than we did on Syria in 2011. Now, without looking too far back, what do we have to do now? We're going to have to, number one, basically crush ISIS. We're going to have to do what we can to crush it in Iraq, trying not to get too far involved in Syria. And if we do get involved in Syria, we're going to have to make sure that we get behind the moderate rebels as much as possible, hope for basically an impasse where the Al-Assad regime and the moderate rebels are able to broker some type of plea, some type of peace, so that that civil war can finally tame down with the two of them turning on ISIS and helping to crush ISIS in Syria. I mean, that's what we're going to have to do now. Obviously, people don't want to put boots on the ground. I get that. But when you start seeing Americans becoming beheaded, and you see that coming at the hands of somebody with a Western accent, you're going to have to ask yourself, we were worried about Al-Qaeda cells before, and this group is obviously more deadly, obviously more organized, and obviously has more riches than Al-Qaeda could have ever dreamed of. So if we don't take care of this now, if we don't take care of this initially in Iraq, and then help the other two factions in Syria to crush ISIS in Syria, we're going to have a very deadly problem here on American soil probably within 5 years or less. And that's the fear. So we're going to have to make sure we act with some expediency in that region within those two countries while they're still two countries. Because if you talk to people and you listen to the media, they're not even addressing ISIS as operating in Syria and in Iraq. They're calling them the Islamic State, and they're basically wiping off the slate, that border between Syria and Iraq. That's dangerous language in and of itself.
Well, it may be dangerous language, Jenna, but they are the Islamic State at this moment, and that's what they declare themselves to be, and that's what they're controlling. Jenna, you there?
You're correct.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, sorry.
I didn't realize we switched.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, they do call themselves the Islamic State, and honestly, in the media, it's kind of an issue of what do we even call them. You know, President Barack Obama refers to them as ISIL. There's ISIS. There's IS. There's just so many different names for this group. But that's kind of irrelevant when you talk about just the genuine terror that they inspire. I think it's interesting that you're referring to them becoming a threat right now, just because it's been a slow-building, horrifying threat that's been building since the U.S. has had some of these people in camps in Iraq since the last time we were in Iraq. Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi was in Camp Buka. He was held there. There have been a lot of rumors as to whether or not he may have been further radicalized while he was there. I spoke to a commander that was there at Camp Buka who called the camp itself a pressure cooker for extremism. So that threat has been building from that point. And the region is definitely not at all restricted to Syria or Iraq. It's Iraq, Syria, it's Lebanon. The group plans to continue to expand, and they're hard to track down. They have been inspiring Westerners across the globe from unexpected places as strange as Chile and Japan. Just the range of different people that can go there and can essentially go there relatively undetected is starting to terrify U.S. officials and has been for a little while now. And now that the U.S. is more involved as well with the beheading of James Foley and the threats on further U.S. journalists, as well as the threats on embassy members in Erbil and U.S. foreigners that are working at gas companies and things like that, that's when we're starting to pay attention, starting to have more support for intervention.
And I you made some really critical points here, Jenna, and really critical points, I think, and the work you've already done in terms of talking to people inside of that organization and covering it with that intensity about the Westerners in the Islamic State. And I think that's the part of the problem here that we're facing, Kate. I think that, and because I think that I would posit that America made a mess of Libya. We've made a mess of Iraq with these wars that made no sense, I think, for us to get into from the beginning. However, having said that, the reality of the Islamic State and of what the Arab and the Muslim world face with this powerful fundamentalist attack on their societies, given that most of them are run by people we supported who are dictators, all that complexity as well, that America can't do nothing.
Right.
I mean, the world has to respond at some level. So the question is, what is a response?
And America has to respond immediately. I mean, with the beheading of Foley, with the threats that are taking place, with the videos that are being posted online about their desire to attack America and raise their flag over the White House, people are concerned. America does have to take a definite hand in this and be in charge of what is taking place. Is what the speaker said earlier, that the world does seem to work a little bit better when America is actively involved. It's going to mean putting boots on the ground. I think that that is a huge statement to make. But unfortunately, we have got to get in and we have to stop ISIS. It doesn't matter what we call them. People get confused about the name. The situation as it stands, they must be stopped before that border that still exists, that doesn't even get talked about anymore, is actually completely erased. And it is a fact that if we don't do something soon, things are going to continue to spin out of control. Because at this moment, ISIS is controlling what is happening. They are leading the charge rather than us being in front of them and stopping them. We're now running and catching up and reacting to what they're doing. We're not being proactive here.
Jen, you were about to say something that I'm going to... Is this Glenn trying to get in?
Yeah, this is Glenn.
Go ahead.
Let's talk about some facts and some history.
Go ahead, please.
America needs to have a hand in this. The American hand has been in this, whatever this is, since at least 1979, when the United States and Saudi Arabia and Pakistan basically invented the Jihadist International Network. There were jihadists before, but they had no international network. And the United States and the Saudis and the Pakistanis, and if you don't believe me, why don't you believe Zbigniew Brzezinski, President Carter's national security person, who bragged about the creation of this force. The U.S. and those two allies spent billions of dollars to create an international jihadist force that drew upon jihadists from all over the world to go into Afghanistan to give the Soviets a black eye. And that was considered to be not only the biggest CIA operation to date, but the most successful one. And because the United States, in the Muslim world, and especially in the Arab Muslim world, does not have any indigenous allies, because the United States is despised in that portion of the world, it doesn't have foot soldiers that can help carry out its foreign policy, except to the extent it can mobilize jihadists. And that's what it's been doing. And so when it wanted to overthrow Colonel Gaddafi in Libya in 2011. It mobilized its jihadists and then provided air cover for them in a 6-7 month air war to allow the jihadists to take over that country and depose Gaddafi. And we see what Libya looks like. They were doing the same thing, including very many Libyan fighters who went straight to Syria to try to depose Assad. And the tables got turned on them there as well, because the jihadists don't want to think of themselves as agents of U.S. foreign policy. They have their own policy, their own worldview, as backward as and reactionary as it is. They do want to operate independently, and so at present, and for a long time, there has been no such thing as a significant, moderate, armed opposition in Syria. And now the big story is, which Americans seem to not recognize, but it is the biggest story for Americans, the biggest story is that the U.S. Jihadist strategy is collapsing with the formation of that Islamic State. That means that the United States had used in order to undermine secular regimes that it opposed is no longer a tool that they can easily manipulate. And that is a crisis. It's a crisis for U.S. foreign policy, but it has nothing to do with the U.S. not having had a hand in that region.
So if we had a hand in that region, Jenna, then what's the unfolding conversation about the response should be? I think
right.
that when Kay said boots on the ground, I think most people would go, oh, no, that's not something I think any American wants to see or maybe we should be doing, but we can argue that point.
Right.
But,
mm-hmm.
but I mean, so what is a response?
Right.
I think, go ahead.
Well, yes, I do definitely think that our response will definitely need to develop beyond airstrikes. That may or may not be boots on the ground. I know that there is very, very, very little support for that in the American public right now from polling. However, there was very little support for U.S. piloted airstrikes and other airstrikes like that just months ago, and the support for that is slowly built as American citizens have come to understand the severity of the problem in Iraq and Syria, and they realize that American lives are threatened, that this threat may be at our doorstep, within 5 years, as was said. And I think that if it comes to the point that this terror continues and more people are dying, more minorities are threatened, I think that the support for boots on the ground may grow, honestly, if the current polling shows that.
And Lenny McHale, who is this? Lenny?
This is, and you were coming to me, and I wanted to say something about that. You know, we keep talking about these polls. The president of the United States, the commander-in-chief, is supposed to have foresight past the polls, supposed to be able to go
right.
15 to 20 years in the future. And too often than not, if there's been a criticism of this president, including the optics criticism that we've seen with him playing golf during all this, is the fact that he is looking at the polls too much. He's supposed to be looking at what 2034 is going to look like because of his actions now, what his legacy will build for 20 years from now. And we're not hearing enough about that. We're hearing about, well, the American people don't have the stomach for it. Well, the American people will not have the stomach for another set of buildings crumbling, let's say in Chicago this time, or in Atlanta, or Los Angeles, if we have another 9/11, or if we just have something blow up, if some of the terror attacks were planned, for example, in Times Square in 2010 actually went off. That's what people truly will not have a stomach for. And I guarantee you they don't have a stomach for seeing their journalists being beheaded on video. So the president has
right.
to ignore the polls and do what's absolutely necessary, whether it's airstrikes or putting limited advisors, quote unquote, on the ground to ensure that ISIS is taken out in an expedient and efficient manner as soon as possible.
But I would say that every American president I can remember has been criticized for and I have major criticisms of the Obama administration, but that whether it was Bush going to his ranch during Katrina or Connie Rice going to buy shoes in the middle of crisis, I mean,
horrible, exactly.
These
yeah.
things happen in every right. kind of piece of power in our presidency. But the question, let me go to the phones here very quickly. Mm-hmm. 410-319-8888. Bill, you're on the air.
Oh, good morning.
Good morning, Bill.
Yes, I'm calling in because I'm hearing all of this heavy-handed talk about how much more involved we need to be in the Middle East and how we need to be taking out these organizations like ISIS. And ISIS is what it's called now, but if we notice that each time we call ourselves getting involved in taking out one of these organizations, another one springs up. The fact of the matter is it's so horrific to see a man beheaded on video, but while the American government is sanctioning airstrikes in a country, if you're an American citizen, you might want to consider the idea of getting out. It's not a place that's safe for America. If we're bombing a country, there's a good idea that those citizens that are citizens of that country that we're bombing don't have a friendly attitude towards Americans in their country. We've seen it before. This is just one video. There were several in the past. We have a very heavy-handed foreign policy with the Middle East. Maybe we need to consider the fact that it's a direct result of American actions that we have all of this destabilization in these countries. That's as a result of our actions.
How much
Right on.
Glenn, you were saying right on. I'll hear you, and then I'm going to hear Kay very quickly, and then I'm going to switch gears here for a moment, ask a question about another subject. But go ahead, Glenn, very quickly, please, and then get to Kay before break.
Yes, all of this urging of more, a bigger U.S. presence, a more violent U.S. presence, more U.S. killing of people in the Middle East. All you're doing is hatching more little chickens that will come home to roost. And Americans don't seem to get it. And they want to continue in the mythological belief that people are that the people of the world want the United States to intervene constantly in their affairs. All people want to handle their own affairs. The United States is not in Iraq because the Iraqi people did not want the United States there. And although the government there is in extremis and would welcome bombs from any quarter, that does not make the people of Iraq like America more. And the United States is now, and especially under President Obama, framing all of its actions, all of its military actions, as if they are humanitarian missions. And now it's to save the Yazidis. Well, you know, before 2003, there were many, many minorities living side by side in many parts of Iraq. There was a thriving Christian community. There were all kinds of sects that had been living side by side for centuries. And that came to an end with the U.S. intervention in Iraq. It was the worst thing that could happen for the humanitarian situation in Iraq. And although people would certainly love to be guarded in a situation of extremists from the crazy folks of the caliphate, that does not mean that they welcome some kind of U.S. presence there. That in fact, the opposition to a U.S. presence in the region is what unites most of the folks, the overwhelming majority of people in the Muslim Arab world. So don't think that the United States
is so naive and
superficial. We really don't Lennon, we don't have a lot of time before we have to go to break here. So I'm asking.
I'll say it really quickly. I mean, the Pakistanis said the same exact thing and made sure they continued to take our aid. You see other nations saying the same exact thing until they're in trouble. And where's the first place they come to? They come to the United States of America money, for soldiers, for help. So you cannot sit there and say, well, they're doing this because they hate us. They hate us until they need help, and then they love us. And that's what happens when it comes to geopolitics. We've done the same things. Heck, the Russians were our enemies. They were our friends until they became our enemies. And they kind of became frenemies, and now we're right back to kind of not knowing what we are. That's how geopolitics works out, and that's how we're treated, especially because we're the biggest military and the biggest economy. So people are going to always have that very strange dynamic with us. So to make it seem as though it's just all our fault is naive, and it's superficial, and it's wrong, and it's dangerously wrong.
But who are that take our money? If you're talking about...
Glenn, I have to introduce this quickly because I need to get to the other two guests as well. So please, go ahead, Glenn, but very quickly. Glenn?
No, I thought you wanted to make room for the other.
Yeah, I want to make sure that... Are we telling me to break right now? Do you want to... So let's break this moment. We'll come right back to our other guests. And then we'll move to Rick Perry for a moment. I really want to get to that conversation as well. Stay with us. Don't go away.
Hey, what do you want? One bourbon, one scotch, one beer.
Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. We are here with Glenn Ford and Lenny McAllister and Jenna McLaughlin from from the Mother Jones and Kay Whitehead. Let me go back to Kay and Jennifer Jennahead real quick to close this out before I ask another question. Kay?
Well, I just think that
can we get her mic up, please?
Job of laying out the history, talking about the history of American intervention. But at this point, this is where we find ourselves. America cannot simply not get involved, cannot simply intervene into this situation. I seriously agree with what Lenny McAllister was saying, that it is naive to think that all we have to do is not offer aid, not give aid, because the world does not want us to get involved and things are going to work out. We're going to have to involve ourselves. Historically, we've always involved ourselves. American public has not been able to stomach a lot of the international policies, and they have happened anyway. So it's not as if presidents have decided that we're not going to do something because the American public cannot stomach it. What we cannot stomach is what we saw with Foley. We cannot stomach what happened on 9/11. Something has to happen in America, where it's the biggest military, the largest economy, must respond and must continue to be as actively involved, if not even more so.
But, Jenna, sometimes I think what Kay was saying is true on some levels. On the other hand, I think that we've seen what happens when America gets engaged in militarily in places that we can't get out of and we have no idea what we're doing in there.
Right. I could definitely see that point. But I definitely agree with Kay that we will need to become involved in this because ISIS is a threat like we've never seen before.
What do you mean by that?
Well, essentially what I mean by that, from what I've spoken with security experts and international terrorism experts, is that ISIS has been recruiting not only people in Iraq and Syria who are disenfranchised, but also people from around the globe who feel apart from their communities, who want to be a part of something larger, who are drawn to the ideology and religion that is ISIS, that Baghdadi has spoken of. And they have taken over more territory, killed more people, seized more cities than Al-Qaeda ever has. And Al-Qaeda themselves have called ISIS too violent, too terrifying, and I feel like that speaks on its own. But I also feel as if we've been speaking too much a little bit about just the United States becoming involved in this,
right?
Because there are so many countries in the international community who have a stake in this. There are right now the numbers of estimated British fighters, which we are also assuming that it was a British national potentially that was the one that beheaded Foley, are at 800, 1,000, and a lot of experts think that these estimates are small. There are hundreds of Australian people there, French people, just a myriad of other countries who have their own citizens going often to Turkey, crossing the open border, going into Iraq and Syria, and joining this fight. And I feel like the fact that our own citizens are leaving and could potentially return signals that the international community really has a stake in this. And I agree from what the Pope has said recently, actually, that the UN needs to have a discussion about this and to really think about what we can do to intervene together. It's not just the U.S. that needs to act, I think.
Mark, why don't you let me have 30 seconds since I'm totally outnumbered by your U.S. interventionist.
Go ahead, Glenn. Go ahead, Glenn.
To say that Iraq is...
We didn't poll anybody about the political ideas before they came on. This is really interesting. Go ahead, Glenn.
Iraq is in danger in terms of of its government because of U.S. policy in Syria. ISIS recruits from all over the world because the United States and its allies created the model for recruiting jihadists from all over the world. It predates ISIS. It begins with U.S. Policy. So to introduce the United States as somehow reacting to an ISIS invention or innovation is ridiculous. That this
I'm sorry.
Upon itself.
And I think, Glenn, I think this is why I think this conversation is what you just said earlier. We had a listener just write in, Allison wrote in. Everything Glenn Ford says is right. Please let him finish what he was saying before the break. Also, I have him on again on this subject with fewer others.
I swear I did not instigate.
I believe that. I know you, Glenn. I know you did not. But I think it's, and I did not poll and had no idea where everybody was going to come down on this issue. I know what this represents to me in this part of our discussion is that I think not just America, but the world is not sure how to address what's going on at the moment. And I think everybody's in a huge quandary. They're in a quandary in Turkey. They're in a quandary in Iran. Mm-hmm. The Assad regime, the more democratic freedom fighters, the Iraqis of all sorts. maybe except for the Saudis, who some of their money is in ISIS. They're divided in their own country. But this is a conversation. And Europe, I think the entire world is kind of trying to figure out what to say on different ways from different national perspectives and different national agendas. That's why I think this subject is really critical for all of us to talk about. And I'm glad that we have, when you have somebody from Mother Jones saying we may have to look at intervention. You know, I'm serious. I mean, this says there's a conversation here that we really have to wrestle with in America about what has to happen. And Glenn Ford is completely right historically about how we got into this, where this all came from. The question is, where does the future go? And there's no easy answer here. But let me ask you all another question here before we run out of time. Let me play this quick clip. We're gonna go from the Islamic State to the Texas state.
Another country of its own.
Another country of its own. And let's play this clip. This is the Governor Rick Perry.
We don't settle political differences with indictments in this country. It is outrageous that some would use partisan political theatrics to rip away at the very fabric of our state's constitution. This indictment amounts to nothing more than abuse of power. And I cannot and I will not allow that to happen. I intend to fight against those who would erode our state's constitution and laws purely for political purposes, and I intend to win.
I find this whole episode very interesting with Rick Perry and his taking on what he's doing in Texas. And I think that the reason I'm chuckling is because it's really interesting to watch how American politicians, conservative and liberal, are backing Rick Perry. In what he's done with Rosemary Lemberg, who was a Democrat. There were two other state's attorneys who had gotten drunk and got caught, but they were Republican. He said nothing. But she also runs the commission investigating corruption in state, in the state government, and is investigating this cancer research group that is close to him. And so the real issue here is watching everybody saying this is too much. And maybe it's Americans in some ways looking at this, Jenna McLaughlin, as it is too much with governments that are corrupt and people are tired, and it's interesting to watch them circling the wagons here, right and left.
Right. I actually haven't covered too much about this, so I don't feel necessarily completely qualified to comment, but I could definitely see how that would be the case in the Rick Perry.
So let me ask, as our Republican in the crew, Lenny McAllister, let me go to you next.
Well, you know, I don't even know if this is so much about Rick Perry than it is about the sad state of American politics. I mean, 2014, it's Rick Perry's indictment. 2013, it's Bridgegate. This summer's latest fad before the Perry indictment was Let's Sue the President, starring John Boehner. I mean, if this is where politics is going, everybody already doesn't like lawyers and doesn't like politicians. It's almost like the peanut butter mix of the two nowadays, where we're going to amalgamate all of it together, and it's turning people off. This is only happening because Rick Perry wants to run for president in 2016, Chris Christie wants to run for president in 2016, and Barack Obama is the president despite 2008 and 2012, and, you know, Republicans trying to make sure he did not win re-election. If this is how we're going to do American politics, if we can't get our representative form of government to behave better than this, where we have to trump up charges and make things up and hope that it spins enough through the media cycle where somebody gets embarrassed and leaves. What does it say about our country? Where are we going? It's no wonder we have what we have going on in Ferguson. It's no wonder what we have when it comes to how people interact with us internationally or the struggling economy or anything else along those lines. This is indicative of the toxicity that we have amongst ourselves in America, and it's not just a Republican or Democratic issue. This is an American problem that we have to fix.
I definitely agree with what you're saying, Lenny. The concern I have is that people are looking at the sad state of American politics. They're looking at this situation with Rick Perry, and they're once again saying, my vote and my voice does not count. And they don't want to involve themselves in the political process, understanding that they must get out and they must be active. I mean, I chuckled when this whole thing happened with Rick Perry as well. I love the way the USA Today article said it was a pep rally rather than a perp walk, that he's out and he's raising his arms and he's getting excited and he's talking about what he is going to do. And at the same time, he's turning people away, not just away from him, because like Lenny said, it's not about him. It's turning people once again away from what's happening with the American political system. It is no wonder we have things happening like in Ferguson. People don't go out and vote. They cannot make changes happening. People are feeling that their votes are not important. And I think we're going in the opposite direction. We fought to be able to vote, to be a part of the political process. And now we're feeling that we don't have a voice at all. So these things are going to continue to happen until people get more actively involved. And I'm not being naive. I'm looking at the research. I'm looking at the polls. People are voting at an all-time low. They feel they cannot make any changes take place. And that's the opposite of what they should think.
Glenn Ford.
Yeah, the only thing I have to say is that if the theory is that Perry has been indicted because he's a potential 2016 presidential candidate, well, they're actually doing the Republicans a favor by besmirching him, because if he performs the way he did as a candidate in 2012, he will further embarrass the already very embarrassing Republican Party.
You know, let me just throw this out to you all just real quickly about this before we move on again. And I think that the thing that struck me the most about this, about Rick Perry, is that if I watch the news, whether it comes out of the state of Maryland where we are broadcasting from, or in any place around the country, or even in the federal government, what bothers me so much is that this does to me show about the corruption of government and power in government.
Mm-hmm.
When you can, as a leader, take away money from the state organization that is investigating corruption in government and get away with it. And part of this was partisan, but to me, because she's a Democrat, he's Republican, and the battle between them, and as I said earlier, two Republican state attorneys were also caught for drunk driving, and nobody in his governor's mansion raised its head at all. But the real issue here, to me, is corruption of power.
Mm-hmm.
And the corruption of power in a society is one of the things that's turning off vast numbers of people from wanting to get involved in politics to begin with. And I think
if corruption is legion, then indictments should also be.
I agree.
Yeah, and on top of that, I mean, we can look at, for example, if Republicans control a state legislature and Democrats have good ideas, but they will never let them get through committee just because they're Democrats, that's corruption of power. Or, I mean, we saw this with the Obamacare legislation. There were certain things the Republicans wanted to include in the legislation that never got into committee. That happens all the time on both sides of the aisle, because if one group has more power than the other and they can basically lock a whole political party out, that party is locked out. Those people that voted for those folks are locked out. And now you only have half the country running either the whole country or a whole state or a whole county. So, I mean, corruption of power, again, it's not necessarily because of what Rick Perry did to this county. It goes back to how we have allowed American politics to play out amongst the oligarchy of power in America, and we're now living with the aftermath of that. That has to change. That's a rudimentary issue, not necessarily a one-issue type of thing.
Go ahead, Kay.
No, I was going to add to what he was saying, but I think it's also very complicated. When we start talking about that has to change, exactly how do we go about changing it? Is it just going out and you vote for someone different? People thought they were voting for change when Barack Obama got into office. And as we've seen throughout the years, the types of issues that we thought he would take the lead on, the types of places where we thought change would happen, are now going in the opposite direction. So people are beginning to question whether or not the actual voting process is working on behalf of the people. Where do we change? With voting more? Because even if you vote more, you're voting in another party who seems to have their own agenda. And as Lenny said, you're locking out the other half of the country. When do we meet across the aisles? Because that is not happening at all, either on the national level or on the local level.
So, and maybe sometimes I think, and maybe Glenn Ford might agree, that sometimes I think you have to go beyond both aisles and go someplace else.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that either aisle is working for us.
You have a duopoly, and the differences between these two parties are the differences between mafia families. Mafia families can become very violent in their opposition to one another, but they're all mafia, and they do agree about certain modes of operation, like stealing, like plunder, and like the rule of power rather than some kind of representative government.
I do have to take a break here, and I do want to say one thing I learned from this segment we did today, the four of you, I appreciate the four of you coming on today, is that we have to really revisit very early next week, and maybe have some of you back, to really pour into the Islamic State, pour into what the state of affairs are. I've been in contact with friends of mine who are Iraqi and Syrian just about this issue, people who oppose the invasion, who oppose Assad. There's some very complex things out here about what's going on. And I think that in reading Jenna's work, knowing the complexity of this is something we really have to wrestle with. I'm not sure boots on the ground is the answer. I'm not sure what the answer is. I know that we as a society and as a world have to wrestle with the kind of fundamentalist world that has been unchained on this planet, whether they are in Israel, America, or the middle of Syria and Iraq. And I think that there's a lot to talk about here. And first of all, Jenna McLaughlin, editorial fellow at Mother Jones, thank you so much. The work you're doing is really incredible, and I look forward to having you back on very soon.
Thanks so much. I enjoyed it.
I did, too. Lenny McAllister, Lenny, always great to have you with us. Thank you so much.
God bless you and your family. Have a wonderful weekend.
Take care. And Glenn Ford, always great to have you on the air. Thank you so much for being part of this session again. And Kay Whitehead, thank you so much as well.
Always. Thank you.
We're going to take a very brief break. And as we go out to this break, you're going to hear one of my favorite songs that was released on this day in 1964, Martha and the Vandellas, Dancing in the Street. And when we come back, we are going to be joined by Marissa Franco from the National Day Labor Organizing Network's Not One More Campaign to talk about her perspectives on race and Ferguson in America. Stay with us.